And this is Jana G back with a special programming of A Show of Solidarity. And we will now go into the parting comments of Sergio Marquis while he was speaking in Vancouver on Saturday, December 4th, when he left Seattle after the WTO meetings. And this is his parting comments regarding his take on the WTO meetings in Seattle.
What about the institution of the WTO? What about areas where we can reform it, improve it, change it? And that's why one of the working groups, as I was explaining to our friends around the table, was mandated to look at these external and internal areas of how we operate. And we shouldn't be afraid of it. Change is part of life. It's a constant. And if the WTO is a very different organization from the GATT, which it is, we can't pretend that it operates in the same world that the GATT did, because that's not on. The world has changed. The good old days, while we try to borrow from them, are behind us. The world of today is the environment for the WTO, and it has to change with the times as well. And we should be creative about addressing that issue. We should ask ourselves, can we make the WTO more open? Can we redistrict more documents? Can we become more transparent without pretending that the WTO is going to be the answer to all the ills of the world? But can we see the WTO as part of a global coherent solution to the challenges that we confront? I think so. Can you discuss labor without raising fears of protectionism, and how you can delicately do that? I think so. But it's going to require not a knee-jerk reaction or rejection. It's going to require some engagement constructively. How can we be more responsive to the external forces? Again, we were discussing over lunch that in Geneva, our task is to produce a document or negotiate a document. That's what we do, and we need to do it well. But I was struck as a new ambassador how little time we spent at the WTO thinking about the world outside the WTO. And that many members take it as their answer that, well, that's what my government does at home. It engages people and talks to people. We don't have to do that because that's being done. But I disagree with that. I think the WTO should complement the work of 135 governments at home. It should have a corporate plan, if you will. It should be worried about what people are saying and doing about the WTO brand name. Any country, any company worries about its brand name. Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't the WTO? Coherence. Canada had put together what I thought was a very strong coherence proposal, which had survived as of last night still, based on the premise that the WTO is one major organization that tries to advance the cause of trade, and that in doing so should work in a more coherent way with the other major entities, whether it be the World Bank or the IMF or the ILO, but to do it in a way that is complementary and not reinventing the wheel or being indifferent of what other organizations are doing. It's similar to constituents back in Canada. When I would meet a constituent as a member of parliament, sometimes they didn't care very much about who was responsible for that issue, whether it be a councillor, an MLA, or an MP. What they wanted at the end of the day is a solution to their problem. And if the solution meant for the MP calling the mayor and for the mayor calling the premier, that was secondary. Their primary concern was, Mr. Markey, here is my problem. Can you help me? Can I have a solution? Then it was up to us to be coherent about who does what, where, and how, so that the constituent can have an answer. Simple analogy, perhaps, but in a bigger world, the same difference. So, not that the WTO can do it all, but what does the WTO bring to the table as a part of a global governance, if you will, to make life a little better for all of us? And so, in closing, and perhaps I ran on a little too much, as I mentioned, yes, we did feel disappointed about the suspension, that we were unable to launch at this time, but in no way should we adopt a defeatist, panicked approach in going and continuing to go down that road. Trade will be a big part of Canada's future. It will help us also define our role in the global village. And I am a firm believer that as Canada becomes even more successful in the trade game, that Canada's presence will become bigger as the world gets smaller. Thank you.
Okay, that was Sergio Markey, Canada's own ambassador to the WTO. And I'm sure there's quite a bit of food for the fodder or whatever to discuss here. Before we carry on, I want to welcome Shane Calder from UVic and Victoria activist, who was also here to respond to Sergio and also bring some other additional concerns on the WTO, and Cezanne from the Philippines, and who is also a youth organizer, and here today to speak on the issues of the WTO as he's seen it in the Philippines. Thanks for being here, and I want to open the panel up to discussion about Sergio's, how people react to this, and you know, specifically one of my concerns is, what is this Canada's corporate plan? I mean, did we hear that? Did you know what? Does someone have a clue what he's talking about here, or what do anybody else have things they want to talk about regarding Sergio's commentary? Saul? Would you like to say something?
Just on that point of corporate plan, I mean, it doesn't refer to transnational corporations. I mean, corporate plan is the language, the buzzword they use for an organizational strategy that the WTO needs to improve its, quotes, optics and stuff like that. You know, it's the way it's seen by the world.
You're saying it's a buzzword?
It's a buzzword. But I was interested in referring to reference to the WTO as a brand name. Because, you know, perhaps we can invoke the rules of truth in advertising to challenge the WTO on that grounds. But frankly, my own feeling is that that was a piece of fluff, that there was really very little said in that statement. And very likely, he was pretty sated from the elaborate meal he had just had. And that I didn't hear anything of substance, really. In that, except that WTO is here to stay, that there needed to be, if there was one important comment, it was closer collaboration with the World Bank, IMF, and all the other global financial institutions. And the term that he used there was this notion of coherence. And we stand diametrically opposed to that, because we're seeking to not further integrate or increase the coherence, as he put it, of the WTO, but to dismantle the WTO. And so, judging by the power or lack thereof of those comments, I think we've got the right ambassador sitting there in Geneva, because I don't think Sergio is a very bright light.
Ooh, okay.
Well, let's make a quick comment. Something that I picked up on was his illusions of grandeur when he said that that the WTO is bringing to the table is part of a global governance to make life better for all of us. And if this is what the WTO is about, I think that the actions in Seattle might have let the WTO know that they are not working for the betterment of the lives of all of us. They are working to the detriment of the lives of all of us. And I also was interested in his use of environment. I didn't hear him talk about the environment, but more the corporate environment. And well, there's one thing in the WTO documents that I found very interesting, and it's a French term called the ordre public. And this was in relation to the TRIPS document, the trade-related industrial or property rights.
Intellectual property rights.
Right. TRIPS. And in it, it said that nothing can be patented if it is against the ordre public or morality, and it defines that as being against the health and environment and welfare of the citizens. Well, I think that we could argue that the WTO itself is against the ordre public, and for that reason, it should not be, its brand patent name should be withdrawn.
Would we like to hear from Shane? Do you have some comments regarding Sergio's?
Sure. I can always say something. I think Joan really touched on something when she mentioned that the WTO is going to make life better for all of us, or that, you know, and this is, I think, a lot of the rhetoric that we'll find with the WTO is a very inclusive language, us Canadians and all this world, this global village. And I have to ask, for who exactly? I mean, when you have such a vast number of citizens, global citizens, you know, striking out against the WTO in various ways, in very, very creative ways, I think the whole notion of inclusiveness really falls apart, you know, and it becomes very clear what the WTO is and who it actually serves. I mean, it's a tool, or I would say more, it's like a weapon. And like many social institutions, it serves, its rhetoric is to serve everyone, but in actuality, it serves a very small percentage of people. And I think that's very much what we saw in Seattle and what we've been seeing in the developing nations or third world nations for a long time. It's very consistent opposition to a global trade that is not in the hands and in the control of the people of themselves, but it's in fact in the hands and in the control of the owners and operators of of our lands and of our food and of our wars and of our environment and such. It's the ordinary people who get screwed in that equation. It's not, you know, so life will get better for some of us, but not all of us. And I have to ask the people at the helm, how much better do they want their lives? I mean, how much more stuff can you possibly have? I mean, how many, you know what I mean? Like the six-figure, seven-figure salaries are just getting a little bit much. I have to say, and I think that was also part of what we saw in Seattle was sort of people saying enough is enough, you know, already. So,
thank you, Shane, Cezanne, and Petra. Thank you for being here and welcome to CFUV and this discussion on the WTO. Coming from the Philippines, Cezanne, what has been your experience in regards to this growing global governance and international trade powers as we now see with the WTO, IMF, and World Bank?
For us in the Philippines, it means death to our people, especially the indigenous people, where their resources are being exploited by the multinational corporations and so on. And there will be the local industry will be stripped off, or it will die natural death, because the multinational corporation will take over the economy, and they will dictate the lifestyle of the Filipino people.
And Petra, you were just in the Philippines recently. I guess you were with Sison at a youth conference?
That's right, Jaina. And not only in the Philippines, but I've been also in Costa Rica. And it is very interesting to hear the statement of one of the speaker who said that WTO is there for the betterment of our lives. Betterment for who? For me, the meaning of WTO is the world takeover of the corporations, local elites, and the rich nations of the world, in exchange for the sacrifice of our lives of indigenous people. It is the annihilation of our indigenous people, their land, and their resources, and the environment. And it's really, I am sad, angry that the speaker is talking about the betterment of our lives, maybe betterment of our lives of corporates and the elite nations. It is not for the betterment of life of our indigenous and ordinary people of the world. And I'd like to kind of say that WTO doesn't spare anyone. All of us are affected here because we all eat, we all breathe air, we all drink water. And who controls all these resources? It is now being controlled by the corporate elite, or what we call now the WTO. Thanks.
Thank you. Sison, we were talking earlier on the panel about where do we go from here as far as after the Seattle WTO meetings. From your perspective, what kind of actions can people here in North America take in solidarity with the struggles that the Filipino people are faced with right now in the Philippines?
I think WTO should be opposed or should be scrapped out, because this WTO for the third world countries is really affecting their life, especially in the Philippines, that the government is now pushing the liberalization, privatization, deregulations of government companies, and the common people are being affected here. It's not the elite or the corporation. And the end victim of this WTO is the children.
Yes. I have here a resolution from the a statement of the Kalinga youth on the World Trade Organization. And would you like me to read it?
Yeah, if you could, please.
This is from the youth conference in the Philippines within the last couple of months. On the 20th day of November, 1999, at Bulanao, Tabug, Kalinga Province, the Philippines. As the world ushers into a new millennium, a new international economic order emerges. There is every reason for us, the indigenous youth of Kalinga, to hope for a better future, to dream dreams. We dream of a just and humane society where both men and women, where all races of the world will truly benefit from our rich biological resources. We dream of a lasting peace. Yet our dreams seem to be going nowhere as the forces of evil, the rich capitalistic nations, transnational corporations, are vigorously intensifying their supremacy over the world, over the whole community of people, the whole nations, and the whole world. In the guise of development, the word globalization is aggressively promoted as our only hope in the present crisis the poor developing countries are experiencing. Economic reforms pushed by the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, have done nothing to eliminate the widespread poverty and gender inequality. And now we are experiencing GATT, WTO's policies, as all detrimental to our environment and to our people. As an indigenous people, we the youth will never allow this to happen. As an indigenous people, no other nation, no other entity have the right to control our country, our people, our lives, and our resources. Generation of indigenous people have nurtured life in our land. Our forefathers have sacrificed their lives to defend our land. We stand proud to be one among the indigenous people who were never colonized by the foreigners. We will continue their collective effort in preserving life and defending land to reach our dreams. We strongly oppose WTO. Let us all unite to fight for our right, our land, our life. So, Cezanne, what were your impressions of this conference? It sounds like a lot of good effort and thought went into this statement, and what are your thoughts as you look back on that conference in light of what happened in Seattle with the police brutality and the fact that no agreements were made? Do you feel positive and optimistic for the future?
Yes, I'm optimistic that this WTO will be scrapped or will not be supported by the world or the all over the world. And I am hoping that with the what happened to Seattle, the youth in the Philippines will be inspired of what happened, and they will be more aggressive or more organizing work and so on to oppose all multinational dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. Would someone like to comment on that resolution at this time? Saul?
I just want to comment on the last statement that was made, and that is that, somehow what happened in Seattle will have a beneficial effect on the non-governmental community, civil society within the Philippines, that it'll strengthen their resolve to go forward. And I think that that is really very, very critical. And one of the main legacies of Seattle is precisely that for the first time in such a visible way, we had an alliance that formed, a lot of it even unspoken, between the Global South delegates that were inside the WTO. More than 70 nations, after all, refused to sign any declaration that they weren't a party to creating. This is the first time that has happened. So on the one hand, you had the Global South delegates, the third world countries, uniting, basically, at more than half the membership of the WTO, against the institution itself and its ways of operating and its methods of exclusion, and, if I might say, also a persuasion. And on the streets, you had people primarily, but not exclusively, but primarily from the first world, who were feeling themselves excluded and feeling the reckless endangerment that has been brought by the WTO to their lives, to the environment, to health, and to other issues that people have mentioned here today. And that it was at least an unspoken alliance, and delegates inside, some from Africa, spoke specifically about being encouraged and kind of buoyed up by what was happening out on the streets. And in the same way, our last speaker was Cezanne was speaking specifically about the fact that what happened in Seattle will have a beneficial effect on the resolve and the activity of those fighting for justice, not only for the indigenous peoples of the Philippines, but for all peoples of the Philippines who have the right to, as the American Constitution puts it, life, freedom, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, since we've been talking about where do we go from here, I wanted to take a brief look at how international trade would be handled without the World Trade Organization. And there have been people discussing these matters, and one of the ideas has been a World Labor Organization, a group that is similar in terms of, like, there's an International Labor Organization, which is basically the long arm of the United Nations, and has done some, I would say, probably good research through the years, but probably have not gone as far as what a World Labor Organization would be, in my eyes, representing unemployed workers, mothers at home, and that sort of thing. And I'm wondering what, you know, if we could discuss a little bit of what a World Labor Organization could or would look like, and what would be some of, like Joan, you mentioned earlier that we would need, quote unquote, some kind of rules or something to govern what, you know, international trade is all about. And I don't doubt that that's needed. But what do you think of a World Labor Organization?
Well, I think that labor is an integral part of what I was referring to before as a public trust. So we need to have respect for over 54 years of international agreements related to the public trust, human rights, peace, environment, and human rights, including labor rights. I think this is the time for us to build up an international body that respects the interdependence and complexity of issues and respects the rule of international law and the International Court of Justice and so on. I think this has got to be in place. Now, I would like to, I have to leave now, but I'd like to raise an issue specifically related to investment, international investment. And I think that if we could persuade those who are on pension from the North and the labor unions to only put money into socially, equitable, environmentally sound investments. I mean, this has been coming out more and more in the media that there are unions, for example, I believe it's the Teachers Union in Ontario that invests in some of the major polluters of the world. We've got to have an international movement where the primary principle in investment for those who are concerned around the world should be in promoting investment in the public trust. Because it seems very ironic that those who are often, those who are opponents of what is going on, are unaware that their money is being invested in perpetuating the system. So I think this is a way that the North can really help the rest of the world. Those who have pensions can invest their money in socially, ethically, environmentally sound investment. And I just wanted to make one final comment that I was really excited about your saying how it was motivating the youth and the activists against the WTO. But I fear, in a way, that many countries that have military dictatorships now might be inspired, unfortunately, by this form of democracy that the U.S. was displaying. Here, the U.S. I would hear, when I was watching it with many, as I mentioned earlier, I was talking to many delegates. I talked to probably 40 delegates from the South about the importance of taking on the North and that the people out in the street were really supporting their position and against the exploitation of the South. But I would hear these comments all the time. Well, is this democracy? and I say, well, now you're seeing democracy American style. And I heard a lot of Europeans just aghast at this would happen in America. And I think this was raised by some of the speakers earlier that this has come home to roost in America. And people see what the militarization of the U.S. And I hope, and we've got to have a strong movement to around the world saying, this is not democracy. And this is an abuse of democracy. And so thank you very much. And,
thank you, Joan.
And Saul's leaving now, too.
Okay, and Saul Arbus, Joan Russo, thanks so much for participating today. And I'm sure maybe we'll do more of these in the future as time goes on. Maybe Saul would like to comment on the World Labor Organization idea.
I also just wanted to make a note that on what John was saying. I think most people around the world already know what the U.S. means by democracy because it's been forced down their throat and or they've been shot for it. On the idea of a World Labor Organization or any kind of international organization, first of all, we can't have an organization like the WTO that assumes itself as a government or and assumes itself as a representative of the people of the world. And And that rather than any, you know, one organization that's going to stand up and supposedly represent us, I think we need to organize at the community level and at the grassroots level and create a kind of organization that's more like a spokes council idea. And I wanted to, use an example of in Seattle, I guess something that I would envision as being that something that we could do on a massive scale and an international scale, and that was the affinity group and spokes council model that we used in the direct actions and at the jail. When we were doing jail solidarity after the actions in Seattle, there was probably about 400 people, and you know we're surrounded by police with their tear gas and with their rubber bullet guns, and you know everyone's really tense. We've been up all night. We're sleeping on cardboard on the street. Everyone's freezing cold, but we need to make some important decisions. And what we did is we had everyone who wanted to speak, who had a proposal of what kind of decision we were going to make, could get up and speak and suggest a proposal. And you know they did this through playback. No one could hear what people were saying. There was 400 people, so that's a lot of people. And so we'd have one person would come up with a loudspeaker and they would say a couple words, and everyone who could hear them would repeat after them so that everyone else could hear them. And we went person after person reading out proposals. And then what we did is we broke down into smaller groups, into affinity groups of 10 to 15 people. And in those groups, we discussed all those proposals and we decided on which proposal that we wanted to go with. And then we sent a spokesperson to a council of all the affinity groups. So we had about 40 people, 40 different affinity groups, and all these spokespeople met, and then they discussed the ideas discussed what their affinity groups wanted to see. And then that spokes council came to a consensus on what kind of action we would take that would meet would meet what each of the affinity groups wanted. And then they took that back to the affinity groups and everyone was happy with this decision. And to me, that's something that that's just a small scale model of something that can work on a large scale. And the fact that it took place under such extreme conditions, I think, you know, shows that we can really do that. I mean, obviously it's more difficult on a larger scale because you've got, you know, people who aren't all there for direct action, or they're not all there for, you know, with the same vision. But I think we can do that. We organize on a community level and send representatives, on a citywide level and then a regional level. And I think we need to do that through labor organizations and community organizations that include all people, that include people who are unemployed or people without incomes like homemakers, or, you know, that it's a labor organization, community organization all in one. So that's kind of what I think about that idea.